The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And here we go. The patented Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho. Duff McKagan calling you. Hope you're doing well. I want to tell you about this couple. They were pregnant and finally became time for them to go to the doctor and have the baby. They went and she went through labor and the baby came out, and it was just a head. And the doctor and the dad and the mom were obviously stunned. But the doctor, you know, checked out the head, and you know, and he came back and he said, "Look, you guys, it's a normal baby boy. So it's just a head, but it's a normal baby boy. So, you know, just raise this boy as your own, and normal. Everything's normal here." And so they did. They took the head, the boy, home, and they raised it as a little baby and a toddler through childhood and through teenage years. And, you know, the head grew up, and then the head turned 21, the son, and the dad took him out to the – I'm going to take him to the bar and get him his first drink. So he takes him to the bar and, you know, kind of plops the head on the bar, and the bartender's a little surprised. And he goes, "My son, this is my son. He's 21 years old, and I want to give him his first drink." And the bartender brings out two beers, and the dad pours it down the boy's mouth. And lo and behold, his arms pop out. And the bartender and the dad are just stunned, and the kid's stunned, too, as you'd quite imagine. And the second beer, he can drink it himself. He pours it down his own mouth, and his torso pops out. And the bartender rushes back and gets two more beers, and you know, hoping for the best. And the boy drinks the fourth beer, and his legs pop out. And this is a joyous time. And the dad, the bartender, and the kid—they're all drinking. And finally, you know, it becomes 2 o'clock at night. And the bartender said, "Look, I gotta shut down. I gotta kick you guys out. This has been great, you know." So the dad and the boy go stumbling out on the sidewalk, and the boy stumbles into the street, and a bus comes along, hits him and kills him. And the bartender comes out and says to the dad, "You should have quit while you were ahead. Thank you very much. Goodbye."
Wow. Duff went a long way for that one. Quit while you're ahead. I'm not sure I could even retell that joke, but we love Duff for sending them. Every single Friday, without fail, Guns N' Roses just announced their summer tour, and it was just both Duff and Axl Rose's birthday this past week, so happy birthday to both those guys. And like I said before, Duff gets a lot of these jokes directly from Axl, so thanks to both of them. And thanks to you for being here with us today on Hacksaw Jim Duggan Talk is Jericho. It's going to be a great show. We got a 2x4 and a hey-o wherever he goes. Plenty of stories from Jim about Roddy Piper, Andre the Giant, Bruiser Brody, the Iron Sheik. Yeah, you're going to hear about the big arrest that nearly ended Hacksaw's wrestling career and definitely killed his push with Vince McMahon.
You're old school, man.
I figured I've known you for 20 years. Yeah, that's right. It's funny. I'm with Hacksaw Jim Duggan. We're here in Liverpool.
and we were doing a convention. And so after the convention was done, they drove us over to the hotel, and I was in the back seat and you're in the front seat, and both of us were sitting there for like 30 seconds trying to figure out how to move the seat back. And then your wife came and just flicked one little switch.
Yeah, that happens a lot, actually, especially at this stage of the game. In other words, we'll still be in the car trying to get you out of the back.
We'd be squeezing up through the driver's side.
Well, you know, first thing I got to do, Chris, though, is give a hoe.
You know,
I got to get a hoe in. I said, everybody should start off the morning with a good hoe.
What?
Hello. It took a second, Eric.
I was too busy adjusting the volume. The other good one I always say is, hey, Jim, how you doing?
Yeah, doing good. Yeah, I had a little health issue there recently.
But wouldn't know what you're saying when I say how you doing. You go, oh, good for an old timer.
Oh, yes. That is.
That's what you always say.
I always do say that.
And I was saying, you said that 20 years ago when you were my age.
Yeah, well, brother.
but seriously, I was going to say, for the last couple of months or 6 months, I go on Instagram and you're in the hospital bed. Yeah. And it seems like there's some issues that were maybe a little bit scary or something along those lines.
It sure was, man. I was in the ICU unit over Thanksgiving. My heart went into AFib, and I'd always never had a heart issue, I was just having trouble catching my breath. I said to my wife, I said, maybe we should go to the doctor. She's like, we're going to the hospital. And boom, they plugged me in. And long story short, they ended up giving me the shock treatment two different times, three times each time.
Wow.
Yeah. And it would come out of AFib, but go right back into it. And they said a lot of folks have that their whole lives and not even aware of it. But it was having an effect on me. So they ended up doing a procedure called an ablation when they went up through my groin and shocked my heart again and got it back into rhythm. Of course, Jake called me and said, Duggan, you never had any rhythm anyway. The Nasty Boys called and said, we'll get a hold of you by Ouija board. I'm like, you know wrestlers. Yeah.
No
sympathy
zero
at all.
Sympathy whatsoever, right?
Yeah.
But that's, so you're saying you actually got the shock treatment where they put the things
the
on?
Paddles, yeah. The first time.
Defibrillator or whatever?
Three times, boom, boom, boom. And of course, they shaved it, burnt my chest. They did it. And they had to wait two more weeks, and then they tried it again, boom, 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 and it went out, but it came right back into AFib. So they said, boom, they went in through the groin, and I just saw the surgeon before I came over, of course, and he was like, you won't have to see me again. And my cardiologist, he's like a wrestler guy, he goes, Duggan, he says, your plumbing's fine, your electrodes are screwed up. So they went and checked the heart. The actual heart is working good. Now they got it back in rhythm. So
I always wondered about that. It happened to Lawler a couple of years ago when he took a couple elbow drops in a row. And the motion. And I wonder if sometimes taking all these bumps that we take. Someone told me once it's like getting hit by a car at 10 miles an hour each time you take a bump. Yeah. What if that shakes your heart out of whack?
Got to have an effect, especially a cumulative effect of over years and years.
Right.
Like Jake was talking to his doctor and he's like, well, how many concussions have you had? And Jake's like, well, probably two a year for the past 40 years.
Right.
So it does have to take an effect on you, I would think. Yeah. But I joke, I said, I'm last of the old timers with all my original body parts. Everybody else has got a new knee, a new hip, a new shoulder.
Well, that's another thing that always kind of scares me too. When you think of like Hogan got a hip replacement,
right.
And a knee replacement. It's like, and those, you guys, I mean, you worked hard, but it wasn't the intense amount of bumps that guys take today. And if those guys, if your generation needed hip transplants, what chance do our generation have? And then the next generation now that are doing so much high intensity.
Are pushing the envelope more and more and more. And I mean, and some of the stuff they do is not even wrestlers, almost stuntman type work they would do. And but that's what the fans seem to like. Back in my day, people say, Hacksaw, what's your favorite move? I said, I kick and punch. I'm a brawler.
I say, hey-o.
If I broke my thumb, I'd be out of work.
But isn't that the truth, though? I mean, I wonder, especially for a guy like you, because you've been around for a long time, even up until early 2000s, working regularly in WCW, kind of seeing how things are changing. But at your peak, the most you ever were over was just from a character. Right. And I find that there's not as many characters now as there was back at that time. Mm-hmm. How do you see it as a guy who's been around?
I think that this generation now is much more professional, you know, and I think they're probably even more athletic with, like you said, the moves they do. You know, you go in the dressing room, they're all in on their phones and stuff, you know. Back in our day, Marty'd be sleeping under a guy under the chair, you know, junkyard dog be in the bathroom making noises. I mean, it was a wild time, you know. So, but I think our generation was more creative. Mm-hmm. I mean, we came up with our own characters. We came up with our own interviews, you know. When last time I went back to WWE, this young kid comes up, he goes, Hacksaw, here's your verbiage for your interview. And I was like, how's some punk kid going to tell Hacksaw Jim Duggan how to cut his interview? And like, well, this is what he wants you to say. And I'm like, well, send me my check. But I got a whole new respect for those guys. That's acting, delivering lines and waiting for somebody else to say something and you say something and seem genuine. It's hard. I was like, I'll see you in the ring. I was just so robotic.
That's so funny because I feel the same way. And I came one step in the past and one step kind of in the now, where when I first came into WWE, there were no writers. And you're right. People talk about this debut that I had in 99. Oh, it was one of the greatest to be, blah, blah, blah. I wrote the whole thing myself, and there was no rehearsals.
Right.
I worked it out with The Rock. He knew his part. I knew mine. Yeah. As the years switch, even I saw Beefcake today. He went to the Hall of Fame. How was it? Well, they asked me what I was going to say. I don't know what I was going to say. And I had every single word, and we had to go past fans and approve it. Right. And it's really gone down that road now. So there is a lot of the creativity, and I think the character development that you would figure out on your own that's right. taken away.
Yeah, and of course, a guy like yourself, brother, I mean, like you said, you saw the transition more than anyone from where it was into what. But back then, I mean, if anybody's going to be a writer, it'd be you. You see, I mean, how is somebody going to write your stuff? It's like, who's going to write Flair's interview? I mean, come on. I mean, some people just got to be themselves. But that was one of the big advantages of back in the day. You'd be in the car with a bunch of guys. You'd be coming, hey, I got an idea. Nah, that's the shits, you know? How about that? That's a great idea, you know, and because you spent so much time in the car, and you came much closer. I think the guys were a lot closer back then. Mm-hmm. You know, now guys, they got their own bus. They have fun. You know, it's a different deal. But hard to argue with success. 80,000 people at Mania. They're doing something right. That's why I always joke with the NFL guys when I do some charity events. You know, I'm like, world champions? Where in the world do you boys go? You know? It's amazing the appeal of wrestling around the world. It really is.
You know, you just hit on so many things in the car rides. Because even in the last few years that I was in WWE, I ride by myself now. I don't want to have to be on anyone else's schedule, whatever.
Right.
But now I'm the guy that should be taking the young cats and telling them the stories. Because that's how it was for years and years and years. And like you mentioned, even hang out with your friends or guys that maybe had a little bit more experience that you would learn from.
Well, that's the deal. It's always better to wrestle somebody, work with somebody that's more experienced than you. That's like, I always say the second generation guys, DiBiase, Jake, Kurt, they grew up in the business. Mm-hmm. You know, they understood it. You know, I started at 25 years old and it took me years. Some say it took me 10 years to figure it out, you know. I was like, I can beat him. They're like, right. The guy I'm wrestling is like, oh my God. So I saw Wrestling 2 at a convention. You know, Mr. Wrestling number 2, I went up because he used to hate wrestling me. You know, one time I was working with him, he had that white mask. I hit him, boom, and there was a little red dot. And it got bigger. Pretty soon his old mask was blood. So I found him at the convention. I said, 2, it's gone full circle. Now I get the young kid, 6'5", 300 pounds, 25 years old. Mr. Duggan, are we on TV tonight? And I'm like, I hope not, kid.
Red light fever.
Try to relax out there, son. It's a big crowd. What, 200-300 people? I'm like, where's my 2x4?
All right, you guys know that I travel every week for AEW, and I'm on the road for Fozzy as well. But I don't worry about appliances or any of the stuff at my house breaking down while I'm gone, because we've got American Home Shield. And truthfully, I'm not a fix-it-myself guy anyway, so even if I was home and we had a leaky faucet or a faulty water heater, I'm not the one who's going to fix it. And unexpected breakdowns like that won't break your bank with American Home Shield warranty, because covered repairs and replacements are taken care of just like that. You just choose a plan that works for you and your budget, and then when a covered item in your home breaks, contact American Home Shield, and their trusted and qualified pros will fix or replace it based on the coverage in your agreement. Right now, you can get 20% off. Just go to ahs.com/Jericho and save that 20%. That's ahs.com/Jericho for 20% off any plan. American Home Shield, don't worry, be warranty. See ahs.com/contracts for coverage details, including limit amounts, fees, limitations, and exclusions. New Jersey residents, the product being offered is a service contract and is separate and distinct from any product or service warranty which may be provided by the home or building manufacturer.
What did you do before you started wrestling? Did you play football?
Football, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm from upstate New York. I had a nice high school career. Football was my main sport. I won the New York State Wrestling Championship, unlimited my senior year, undefeated. My shot put record from 1973 stands today.
Wow.
I'm like, get those kids some Cheerios up there. What the devil's going on in Glens Falls? But I was pretty highly recruited. I ended up playing for SMU, Southern Methodist in Dallas, you know. And Gene Okerlund always goes, yeah, Hacksaw Duggan, who took a cut and pay to leave SMU and go to Atlanta Falcons. I'm like, gee. But it worked out great because when I was down there, I met Fritz von Erich. Mm. And he's the one that suggested wrestling. And I didn't watch wrestling growing up. I wasn't a wrestling fan. I was a football player. I'm like, yeah, thanks, buddy. Mm-hmm. I'll be playing 10 years in the NFL. You know, it was for the Falcons in 77, two knee operations. I went up to Canada. I played a little bit with the Argonauts in 78.
Kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
Would you make there $5,000 a season?
Yeah, it wasn't too much. You ain't kidding. And when they called me in, I thought they were going to give me a bonus, but they cut me, right? I go in there, I'm ready to gut. But they have the limit on Americans, you know?
Right. Mean?
So if a skilled Canadian player gets hurt, they bring an American offensive lineman, you're gone.
Yeah.
So I called Fritz up. I said, hey, I might want to try that wrestling deal.
That wrestling deal.
Oh, and I started off as Big Jim Duggan.
Okay.
Yeah, short hair, clean shaven. I wore a long gold bathrobe to the ring, right? So I went up to New York. I broke in Dallas, but my dad knew Arnie Skolin and Vince Sr.
How'd your dad know him?
My dad was chief of police, so who knows how.
In Glens Falls?
In Glens Falls, yeah.
He knew all the boys.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Can I just say one thing quickly? It's so funny. Growing up in the 80s, like, you would know towns specifically because of wrestling.
Yeah.
Like Glens Falls, yeah. Sweetwater, Texas. Yeah. You know, where's the place where Boss Man is from? Georgia, somewhere in Georgia. Stone Mountain, Georgia. Yeah. Cobb County, Georgia.
Cobb County, yeah.
Stone Mountain's where Jacob. From. Jake, so right. As soon as you said where I grew up, I'm like, Glens Falls, New York. I know what that is.
Yeah,
never been there, but I know that's the home of you.
I joke, everywhere else I'm Hacksaw Duggan. In Glens Falls, I'm Chief Duggan's kid. That Duggan's kid grew up on Keenan Street.
So your dad knew Arnie and Senior. Right,
so they brought me in, and I was doing jobs. There's going around the internet doing jobs for Hogan as Big Jim and Sergeant Slaughter. I try to get out of the Cobra clutch. So finally, Skolin and Vince Sr. call me in the office, you know, and they're smoking the big cigars, and, you know, the old smoke is down this high in the ceiling. And they're like, kid, you might have a future, but come up with something better than Big Jim and get rid of that gold bathrobe. So they said, we're going to send you out to learn how to wrestle. And I'm thinking, well, shit, where the hell are they going to send me this? So we're going to send you to Hawaii.
Wow.
So I went out. I'm working for High Chief Peter Myvie in Hawaii. I met Haku, one of my best friends. This was like 1980, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So I changed my gimmick again. I wear a mask, and I wrestle as the convict. You know, and even though I hadn't been incarcerated yet.
That's to come.
Yeah, yeah.
That story's coming.
Yeah. Ouch. The bust of a living infamy. But anyway, so I'm trying, a young kid trying to dress up the convict gimmick. And so I put little C's on my hood for the convict. And the fans were like, why'd you put those ears on your mask? I said, they're not ears, they're C's. For the convict, so. Needless to say, that didn't work. I came back. I went to Georgia Championship Wrestling, where I met one of my best friends, Terry Gordy, in my life, man. Mm. Gordy and I became real tight. Then I went down to Pensacola. I worked for the Fullers, and he was a payoff guy, so you could get any combination of drugs or cash you wanted, you know.
Bartering.
Yeah, whatever you wanted.
Because that territory was nuts, because that's where Bob, Bullet Bob, was there.
Right.
It was like Rick McGraw.
Yeah.
Arn used to tell me they would go party all night, sleep on the beach on lawn chairs.
And great, yeah. I had a $500 a week guarantee, right? So Brody calls me from San Antonio, or excuse me, Buck Roby called me first. He goes, there's a big spot for you here in San Antonio working with Brody. I'm like, things are going pretty good here in Pensacola. I had a hot little stripper living on the beach. I had a 500 a week guarantee.
And short travels too.
Yeah,
right?
short trips. Yeah, Joe LeDuc, Luke was there, the bushwhacker. Then Brody called me. He's like, Duggan, get your butt over here if you want to learn how to wrestle. So I went to San Antonio.
Oh, wow. To work with Brody?
Brody.
No kidding.
Yeah, my first night in was, Joe Blanchard was working with Paul Bosch. The last of the great payoff guys, Paul Bosch. Mm-hmm. And so we did Houston, Texas, and I got my envelope and I went back in the stall and I opened it up. It was $1,000. I'm like, talk about setting the hook. I'm coming.
Is that for 1 week? Was
That was that one show.
One show.
Yeah, with Brody on top. And that's why, like I said, I'm getting got my U-Haul. That was the last time I thought $1,000 payoff.
I was gonna say that, right. So what was it like working with Brody?
Great. Yeah, Brody was pretty instrumental in my career. Actually, we were out in West Texas, and I was a heel, you know, and just getting back and forth in the dressing room, you know, people spit on you and punch you and kick at you. It was dangerous. You'd walk out to your car in a group, you know, and so they really believed long before sports entertainment, right? You know, if you want me, come up in the ring, you know. Yeah. So just getting back and forth was tough. So I'm sitting in the dressing room all covered with loogies and bruises, and Brody walks in. He goes, Duggan, he says, if you carry something to the ring, carry something you can use. Forget those feathered boas and sequin robes. I'm sitting there, I look down, I'm like, well, here's a piece of wood. And I came out yelling, waving that 2x4. It was like part in the Red Sea. Then people scattered. I got to the ring, I'm like, this is great. You know,
you know, it's interesting because I know, because I think we'll probably get to the point where you work for Watts and UWF, right? In that era. Because I used to get that in Winnipeg. For some reason.
I think you were down there when I was down there.
No. Tony?
I think that was a shot, a little curveball.
Yeah, but Tony Kandel, the promoter of Winnipeg, used to bring the tapes from UWF up to Winnipeg. And I saw you before you were Hacksaw Jim Duggan Hayo. Yeah, right. And you were like a hard-hitting.
Yeah, well, as the character went on, I got sillier, you know, which added to my longevity.
But that's fine, but I'm just saying, when you first started, because people that don't know, you could work with Brody and put on a hell of a match, I'm sure.
Buzz Sawyer, one-man gang. We had some battles down there in Mid-South. You know, it was pretty much a shoot. Just the finish was a work. Because, you know, as you know, that's a big misconception in wrestling. People go, you guys are all good friends, aren't you? I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. We're all really good buddies. And Buzz and I didn't get along at all.
Really?
Oh, no. But we worked together because we knew it was beneficial for both of us.
But the matches were pretty
solid. It was pretty live, yeah. I have had easier street fights than lost.
But I think that's, once again, at this point in time, now it's a little bit more, I don't know if the word you would use for, there's more parity as far as wins, losses. Then you needed to win to stay on top to make the most money.
Right.
Or get a push to be in the top level.
Yeah, yeah.
If someone came in, like if I'm Buzz Sawyer and Duggan comes in, you're doing the same hard-hitting style that I'm doing, I might not want you around because you're going to screw my money up,
that's
right?
That's right, yeah. And that's what I said. It's a very competitive business, and people never look at it that way. Mm-hmm. You know, I tell folks, as a business, look at it a bit. There's 1,500 NFL football players. There's 500 NBA basketball players. There's probably 100 guys making a living wrestling. Mm-hmm. It's a television show. It's more competitive than sports, but people never understand it. They're like, wrestling's wrestling. And it's just not kids from America. You got kids from Japan, Australia, Europe. Everybody wants. So it's a very competitive business. Mm. And the odds of making, I said, you got a better chance of playing in the NBA than making it in wrestling.
Being a top level guy.
But also chase your dreams, because who would have ever thought, you know, I looked at Daniel Bryan. I said, there's no way that guy's going to make it. Not a chance in the world. But there's a guy that had the heart, the desire, the work ethic, and he made it.
Well, and also, too, like you said, times do change. Like, if you're talking about, I'm a big hockey fan, you're never going to have another Wayne Gretzky because the game has changed.
Yeah.
You know, even if that guy came along to this day, it would be a whole different ball of wax. It's the same thing with wrestling. Now, you see it. I mean, I remember, and this is with all ultimate respect, you'll get what I'm saying. Funk and Briscoe, classic matches. You watch them. They don't do a whole lot.
They don't do
anything. Nothing really happens.
Bar or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Now put yourself in that mindset of 1972. It's genius. Watching it from 2019, you have to really understand it, or you're going to go, this is boring.
Right.
So I think that's how the business has kind of transcended all throughout.
Yeah, and that's why we're talking, the kids are pushing the envelope farther and farther. I mean, how much higher can you jump? I mean, tables, ladders, and chairs.
Right.
You
know, right.
I mean, what's next? Guillotine match. But the kids are doing it. Mm-hmm. Like I said, they're more professional, but you wonder about the long-term effects. But also, I think the kids now are making enough money that they don't have to stay in as long.
Yeah.
And it's going to really hurt the indies down the road, because guys that would be able to draw in the indies made enough money that they're not out there hustling the indies.
Yeah, or getting signed very quickly because Vince doesn't want them to go to this place.
That is great. If someplace else pop up, more places to work, the better for everybody, you know, not for the talent and for the fans.
Right.
Because for every Hertz, there's an Avis. You know, there's always room for number two.
Right.
And people want an alternative. And I think that's why the indies are popular now. I do a few indies.
Mm-hmm.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
You mentioned you're good friends with Terry Gordy. Did you ever work with him? Because that's another
guy. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. You have me and Gordy down there. It was big Jim Duggan back in there. Yeah. And of course, he beat the devil out of me, man. And it's funny, you know, me and Gordy were good friends. I left Georgia. He went his way. I went mine. And I ended up in Louisiana, where I hooked up with Doc, Steve Williams.
Mm.
And Doc and I became best friends. We moved in together. And then I came up to New York. Doc went to Japan. Him and Gordy hooked up, and they became best friends. So all three of us were best friends, man.
But you never did the Japan run with those two guys?
Not with those two. No, but we did do the deal, I'm sure, as you do, somebody have a picture of holding the picture of your buddy holding the picture but we never were over there together. I wasn't a big Japan guy. I didn't like Japan. Those guys loved it. But
the last time I saw Gordy was in Japan. That's after he had his voice box removed.
That was Doc.
I meant Doc. He had a hole in his throat.
He had a hole in his throat.
Yeah. And remember, and
throat was, cancer.
Right. And it was, I don't recall if he didn't have the thing, he would just hold it. Yeah. I remember seeing, we were wrestling in Japan. I actually wrestled Benoit and he came there to check it out. I have a picture with those, the three of us.
Wow,
it's an interesting shot, you know?
Right. Yeah. That's the deal. My three good friends, Doc, Gordy, Piper, are all dead.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm a cancer survivor and I had, you know, a heart issue. We put a lot of stuff in our bodies back in the day. We were talking with Sid about that. And we were all sitting around the table, Flair and everybody. And I think it was Lita was sitting there with us and we're all talking. I said, Lita, 20 years ago, this conversation was totally different. Nowadays, I guess it hurts. I got this surgery. You know.
But I mean, we'll get into the WWE, but the miles you guys are putting in. But then, you know, it was the 80s. There's a lot of drugs and cocaine and then there's steroids and you're drinking because you're on the road all the time. It's amazing that more guys haven't had those type of issues.
It was a tough business, you know, high divorce rate, high drug and alcoholism rate, high death rate. And, you know, especially back in the 80s, early 90s, people try to compare you to a sports team. And I said, no, we were more like a rock and roll band than you were a sports team. You know, a lot of drug. Here's an 8-ball. You want to sleep with my old lady? You know what I mean? It was the 80s. Small piles were good.
So how did you end up going to first I was going to ask you, when you were working with Brody and those guys, what was your name? Just Jim Duggan?
When I went to San Antonio, that's when I became Hacksaw and got the 2x4.
Where'd you find the Hacksaw idea?
the BS story is from my football days. I was on the kickoff team. I go down and I bust my way through the wedge. So I hack my way through. I Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Real story. Me, Brody, and Roby were sitting around the kitchen table drinking Jack Daniels. How about this? No. How about that? No. How about Hacksaw? It might work.
Sounds good. Give me another shot.
Yeah. When people go, you're Hacksaw Duggan, you carry a 2x4. Shouldn't you be 2x4, Duggan? I'm like, it's wrestling. It doesn't have to make sense.
You can't carry a hacksaw through airport security, pal.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah. Of course, one time, though, I got a big giant splinter in my thumb, you know, a big nasty splinter. And I went, oh, ho, ho. Wrestler's honor.
So when you're talking about all these different territories, because in the early 80s, around this time frame, you could go to Dallas and you could go, we mentioned, to Portland or Florida.
Yeah, so many territories.
And then suddenly Vince starts buying up all the territories. And when did you get the call to talk to him?
When WrestleMania 1 came up, you know, Vince was cherry picking the guys. He came down to Mid-South. We were running Superdome shows. It was a hot territory.
It's a stadium
down there. Yeah. And he grabbed Junkyard Dog for number one, you know.
Now, let me just say this. How popular and huge was Junkyard Dog in that territory?
Yeah, he was Hogan in Mid-South, right. Man, you know. Of course, I was glad to see him go because I got bumped up the card.
Once again.
But Dog was a friend of mine, so he went up, and that business is business. So, boom, that elevated me to the top babyface there in Mid-South. So I was having a good run. WrestleMania 2 came up. He snatched Jake. Jake went up for two. You know, Jake calls me, brother, you got to get up here, man. So WrestleMania 3 came up. I ended up going up, making the move. And then DiBiase's down there in Mid-South. He's like, I can't go to New York. Jake the Snake, Junkyard Dog, Hacksaw Duggan. I'm Ted DiBiase. As you know, he comes up, he turns into the million-dollar man. He's got the best gimmick of anybody, right?
But let's go back and talk about your conversation with Vince when he first brought you up. How does that work?
I contacted him. He didn't contact me. Yeah, I contacted him, and he said, go ahead and finish out your obligations down there. Very professional. Brought me up. Brings me up to the first TV, and you know New York TV. You know, there's all these 18-wheelers, the buses, the limos. It's intimidating, you know?
Right.
And they do, like 4 hours back in the day of TV, you know? So I sit there. I was, like, on the second hour. So I'm sitting in the back, and Jake comes up. He goes, Duggan, you done? I'm like, yeah. He goes, well, let's go. Well, you sure it's okay, Jake? Come on, let's go. Get in the car. Come on. So we jump in the car. We're driving down the road. We're about a half hour down the road. Jake looks over and goes, man, I can't believe you left TV on your first day. I'm like, brother, you told me it was all right. I can't believe it, man.
when you came in, did Vince have an idea for a gimmick? Because it seems like you already had the hacks on the 2x4.
I had the 2x4 gimmick. The first thing they did, they had me like on a forklift, driving around a forklift. And right off the bat, they kind of started putting the gas to me, you know. And then, of course, WrestleMania 3, that was a huge opportunity. I ran in on Nikolai and the Sheik in the Killer Bees, you know, in the 93,000 people. I was really new to the territory. I came down with my 2x4, had American flag on it. I hit the Sheik. I hit Nikolai. They roll out. I'm standing in the ring. Got 93,000 people chanting, USA. I mean, it was a thrill of a lifetime. You know, I came back to the dressing room. Everybody's like, Duggan, how's the crowd? How's the crowd? I'm like, well, without my glasses, the first three rows are full. I said, the crowd intimidates you? I'm like, no.
It sounded loud.
Just a big blur.
But so that's where the USA thing started, was from that.
Yeah, well, I did the USA a little bit down in Mid-South because Ted and I were the Rat Pack, and he ended up hooking up with Skandar Akbar, and that's when I started doing the USA deal. But that Mid-South, what a great territory. And of course, working with Ted when we were the Rat Pack, you know, we had to come up with different ideas. So we came, this is on the network. You see, I wore a complete gorilla outfit to TV. I'm standing out in front of the studio with a bunch of balloons, and the fans are like, oh, gorilla, you want to go to TV? I'm like, ooh, ooh, ooh. Right? So they bring me in the TV show. All of that passing out balloons, you know, baby facing the devil out of it. Finally, it's Dog and DiBiase. Lose or leave town. So no way Dog's going to lose, like you said. Boom, boom, boom. Dog takes a bump out of the ring. I go over, I brush him off. He turns around, boom, hit him in the back of the head. Run his head in the post. I pull that gorilla mask off. They're like, it's Duggan. It's Cockeyed Duggan. And I wouldn't get mad about the cock idea, but like, it's Duggan. It ain't Duggan.
Right? Two G's.
You know my interview, right? That was a whole deal.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But then, because you're one of the few guys that came up to Vince at that time that didn't get some kind of a cartoon-esque character.
Well, I already was there.
You already were, brother. Yeah.
But then, as I evolved longer and longer, when I became like the king of wrestling, I had the cape, the crown, the flag, the board, the thumb, the tongue, the hoe, and the crossed eyes, right? And Strongbow be like, Duggan, can you be a little more serious in the ring? And then we do that primetime show with Bobby, me, Vince, Bobby, and Hillbilly and Kurt, right? And Bobby be like, you know, Vince, Duggan needs an eagle. I'm like, Bobby, shut up, right? He'll get you an eagle as a rib, right? Because he got the bird, Frankie, right. I mean, Jake. And,
yeah, yeah. Give me the lineup again.
The bulldog.
What is the gimmicks that you had again?
The crown, the cape, the flag, the board, the thumb, the tongue, the hoe, and the crossed eyes. Oh. That's why I always ask Flair, you know, Flair, woo, woo. I'm like, Ricky, your trunk's too tight or what? It's more like, oh.
Because you were getting a really big push at this time too, because yeah. You're almost like number two babyface behind.
Yeah, they were Hogan. Putting the big gas to me.
Right, right, right.
And it was the absolute penthouse of the poop house. Mm. One afternoon, man, we flew into Newark and we were wrestling in Asbury Park, and I'm standing in a rent-a-car line, and the Sheik comes up, Iron Sheik, goes, Duggan, maybe I ride with you to the building. I'm like, sure, Sheiky, you know, I'm a young guy, should have known better.
Because in this day and age, it's huge kayfabe.
Is strong, right.
Right, yeah. America's hero and the, and right, the evil. Just,
this is right after WrestleMania 3.
Evil. Yeah, right. I mean, Iranian. Said
in front of everybody, oh, USA, I'm at the top of the world. Mm. So I get the Sheiky in the car, and we're driving down the road. He says, maybe I get some St. Pauli girl beer. I'll never drink another St. Pauli girl beer as long as I live. We picked them up and we're driving down the road. I'm like, well, Sheik, I have some pot. You want to smoke a doobie? He's like, yeah. So we burn the weed and we're driving down on Garden State Parkway. I'm sipping on the beer. We go by the trooper. I'm sipping on the trooper's like, oh my God.
Oh.
Right. Here comes pulling him behind me. I live in Louisiana that's got drive-through daiquiri huts. So the cop, he comes up, he goes, you're drinking while driving. I'm like, yes.
Oh.
But I'm not drunk.
Oh,
I'm just
no.
Sipping on a beer. He goes, that's illegal in New Jersey. Oh. And so he goes, you got anything in the car you want to declare? You know, and I obviously could smell the pot. And then my dad was chief of police. And, you know, in Louisiana, you get caught with pot, the cops would take it and say, get the hell out of here, hacksaw.
Right, right, right.
So I said, yes, sir, officer, there's a small amount of marijuana under my seat. Out of the car, feet back, and spread them.
Oh.
Oh. USA.
My dad's the chief of police in Glens Falls.
So now they got me, and they go over to Sheiky, and he has the purse gimmick back in the day, right? And they open it up, sitting right on top of the big gram of cocaine.
Oh.
So boom, they pull him out of the car. Now the two of us are against the cars, and it's like a police banquet. I mean, there's cops everywhere. So everybody's going down the road. There's Hexside and the Iron Sheik.
What?
So now we go, and I had got a ticket for drinking while driving and having, you know, four doobies, less than a half ounce, whatever the deal was. So I got two tickets. But the Sheik had a felony arrest because they had ended up having 3 grams of cocaine.
Mm.
So he had to go in front of a judge. But we got bonded out, and we made the show that night.
Wow.
And we didn't tell nobody.
Oh.
Yeah. And so I called Deborah. I called my wife. I'm like, honey, we got popped, but nobody knows. She calls me like 6 o'clock the next morning. This is long before the internet, mm-hmm. Right? Everybody knows.
Oh, my gosh.
Everybody. So my first call was my dad, who was ambushed in the police chief's office because they come in. How about your kid getting arrested for drunk driving, smoking pot, and doing cocaine? My dad's like, what? He didn't know nothing about it, right? So I called my pop, and he's like, you get arrested for cocaine? I said, no, sir. I got arrested for smoking marijuana. I know you got arrested sooner or later for smoking that shit. You know, he chewed my ass. But then my family really rallied around me because they realized what a huge hit I was about to take, man. And my next call was to Vince, and I'll remember verbatim what he said to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, and usually you call Vince, you know, especially me, I'm on the hold for half an hour. Ding, 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 ding. I'm Jim Duggan for Vince McMahon. Click, click, Jim. And I remember, he goes, Jim, what have you done to us?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, Vince, I'm embarrassed and ashamed. He says, turn in your tickets and go home. Boom, and slammed the phone down, man. And I flew home because, I mean, what a huge, unbelievable shot to my career. I was lucky to survive it.
Mm-hmm.
And I went home and I went crazy. I mean, I'm surprised my wife stayed. I got a big softball of cocaine. I was drinking whiskey. If a rabbit ran through my backyard, chopping down trees. I mean, because I just achieved your goal. You worked so hard and you had the opportunity. All of a sudden, I'm on top of the world at WrestleMania 3 in one stupid move.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, I flush it all down the toilet, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because Vince did the promo. Duggan Sheik will never, ever work for Doug because Jake was trying to schmooze it over. And Jake called me and goes, yeah, you're screwed, brother.
I think the worst part of the whole thing was the
kayfabe.
The kayfabe, right? If it was the weed or whatever, Vince would have worked, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Maybe not the cocaine, but The kayfabe. Because even as a kid, like I said, I grew up in Winnipeg. So this was 1987, 88, 86, whatever it was. A 15, 16-year-old kid, I heard about Sheik and Duggan.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, wow, like, as a kid, you didn't know.
Yeah, it was the bus. Here's what, how many years later? It's a bus to live. Talking about anybody in wrestling got popped. Duggan Sheik, you know? And I do interviews. They're like, well, we don't know how to ask. I'm like, ask me, brother.
Yeah, yeah.
Because now it's part of the story. I do a stand-up show.
I was going to ask you if you did.
And if somebody doesn't ask it, I have Deborah Planted in there.
Tell us about this.
And I'm like, oh, thanks. There's always got to be somebody, right? Security, come get this guy.
Got blonde girls at every show. Yeah. You know, I had one of those calls when we were in Brazil, and somebody threw a Brazilian flag in the ring. And I was the heel. I'd done it a million times before. I'm sure you've seen it. You grab the flag, pretend to blow your nose in it, throw it on the ground, kick it outside. Halfway through the match, referee comes in. Another referee says, you have to apologize right now. The army wants to arrest you. What? The army wants to arrest you for kicking the flag. And literally, look, and there's an army of Brazilian, you know, national.
That's right.
Yes. And long story short, I had to say an apology. I came back. They wanted to take me straight to jail. Okay. I had to leave the country that night. And Vince gave me that call. I called him, and I thought he was like, I was like, hey, you're not gonna believe it happened. He's like, you stupid idiot. He goes, you know what you have done to us in South America? We've been trying to build Brazil for years, you just killed it. He said, didn't say turn your tickets because this is digital. He said, get on the plane and go home. And I don't want to talk to you until I'm ready to talk to you. And I was,
that must be a standard thing he has for guys. Yeah.
I didn't get fired, but
Duggan, Jericho, Jake,
go home. I got suspended. I got fined, you know, the whole deal. But I understand that feeling, like you said, of shit, I didn't mean to do that.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
and that joke, I said, you know, I was never world champion. I was never tag team champion. I was never intercontinental champion. I was lucky to win a match after that.
So you didn't get fired.
What happened? Yeah, I went off for a while, and then finally I realized I had to do something, go back to work. So I called Dusty down at WCW, and I set a meeting up with Dusty. But before I went down, Pritchard called me and said, don't do nothing drastic. We're going to bring you back. Just keep your head down. And they brought me back. But like I said, again, they never put the gas. I mean, they kept me strong. Obviously, working with Andre and stuff, they kept me real strong, but I never had that momentum that I had if I didn't screw
you
up.
You lost the trust of being a legit top main event guy, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a big shot to my career. But it's been a successful business for me also. You know, so many people hear the negative stories about professional wrestling. Jake, one of my best friends, and all his demons, Scott Hall, everybody here. For me, it's been a great business. You know, I've been with my wife for 35 years.
And that's impressive.
Yeah. I never had to go to rehab for booze or drugs. I did a lot of both, you know. Just never had that addictive type personality. I joke, I say, no felony arrest. Best known misdemeanor in history. But and I put two daughters through school. I live a comfortable life, you know, and a lot of it's to do with the WWF, you know. And of course, I joke, I said, the WWF was my heyday where I wrestled DiBiase, Dusty, and Orton, but they also brought me back into WWE, where I wrestled Dusty's kid, DiBiase's kid, Norton's kid. So first I beat up the old man, and then I beat up the kid.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you came back, you mentioned Andre. I forgot about that you guys were a tag team for a long period of time, correct? With
Andre?
You and Andre? Or did you work?
No, Andre actually, he elevated me from a mid-card guy to a main
event. Did you work against him?
Against him.
That's what it was.
Yeah, because I had worked with him as a kid over in Hawaii as a convict. All the top guys would go to Japan, and on the way back, they stopped for my via, spend a week in Hawaii, and do a show with me, or with Peter. And I worked with Andre, and so I got to know him. So we did a deal on a Saturday night main event where he's standing in the middle of the ring. And of course, there's a giant in our business from Big Show, Yokozuna, any of them. They're like, Duggan, get your 2x4. Come on, you know, get your 2x4, Duggan.
Yeah.
So Andre's standing in the middle of the ring. He's like, I challenge anyone. Duggan, get your 2x4. Come on. So I run down, man. I got my chin on Andre's belly. I'm looking up at him like, I'm afraid of you, right? And he went to grab me by the throat, and just his thumb hit my lip. Boom. And my lip just fell off.
Wow.
So, oh, yeah. So it's worked out great now because blood is just cascading down my chest, just pouring like a big blade job. And I'm going down. I feel around. I get my 2x4. Boom. I hit the big giant between the eyes. He goes down like a huge redwood tree. WWF goes off the air. Me standing over Andre the Giant, covered in blood.
That's right. I forgot about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and that bumped me up to a main event guy where I was able to work with Andre a bunch.
Well, he must have liked you then for that to
Yeah, he
happen.
Definitely liked me. Right. Yeah, if he didn't like you, yeah, he could be the Bam Bam. He chased Bam Bam out of the ring. He could be an irritable giant. You know, I joke, I get on the airplane next to a businessman. He go, I had a rough day. I'd be, brother.
him and Bad News had some issues too. Yeah.
Bad News had some issues. But yeah. Bad News wasn't afraid of Andre, mm-hmm. man. That would have been a bad clash. Wouldn't be good for any of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he was a tough cat,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing about guys in that era. Like, just legit, like all you guys are legit.
It was a snake pit of tough guys.
Yeah.
And that's why you didn't have a whole lot of fights, because nobody's going to walk away clean. You know, you might get a few, but the other guy's going to get his in,
right,
too.
Right, right, right.
So there's a lot of mutual respect. Mm-hmm. Because surprisingly, there's not more stuff like that, because you're on the road a lot, you're away from your family, you're worried about your payoff. They got 20 guys in a room this size, you know, mm-hmm. made for six. It's television, it's pressure. It's surprising more guys don't pop.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, especially back then, too, like you said, because your guys' schedule was legitimately 250, 300 days a year. Is that correct?
Yeah, it worked a lot. Yeah, my longest run was 54 days straight, but Jake and Pipe were up over 100, man. Yeah.
Wow.
But that, you didn't have a contract back then. So you work, you got paid. You didn't work, you didn't get paid. My 54 was with Andre. So that made our main event. So anytime Andre wanted to work, yes, sir, boss. You ain't kidding.
And you can see the difference in your checks.
Yeah.
How did you end up leaving and going to WCW?
Well, first they brought Lex in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was doing the USA deal, and they gave Lex the Lex Express, and they flew him in on a helicopter. So the writing was kind of on the wall. There's kind of a flushing sound going on there.
He's
you
covered
know?
His stars and stripes, and you just got the stripes.
Yeah. Hey, I haven't been around long enough to say something's up here.
Yeah.
So I ended up out doing a couple of indies for a while, and then Hulkster ended up down with WCW. And when his first day went down there, I went down with him and Jimmy, and went in with WCW when Bischoff was still an okay guy.
Yeah, and that was pre-NWO time frame, right?
Yes. And it was great down there. Of course, they offered contracts, you know, and WWF, if you work, you get paid. If you don't work, you don't get paid. So everybody, you know, shit. But it shows what a master is, because, you know, we went down there. I think it was my second week in WC, maybe my third week down there. I beat Stunning Steve Austin so bad, he had to shave his head and change his name. I should get a kickback on this Stone Cold thing, right? You know, he's going to be running around Hollywood Blondes or something, yeah. Man. I said, I beat the hair off the boy's head.
that was me. Do you want some? Yeah, of course. Yeah, come on, let's have a brother cocktail here. There you go. Because I remember that was the big controversy, but you beat him for a title or something
that. Actually, you know, he didn't want to do the job, and he went down with a bogus injury. That's why it only went 30 seconds or something.
Right.
It was just all BS.
What were the big differences that you noticed between WCW and WWE at that point in time?
Well, I think that was the start of a change of where guys were doing favors on the way out. You know, guy do you a favor on the way in, was your time to leave the territory, you did the favor on the way out. I think then guys were starting to be more aware of, you know, contracts and negotiations and stuff. Mm-hmm. But
there's so many, I'm just thinking about when you mentioned, you know, the Andre thing and then the King thing, because you worked with Harley to become the King.
Harley, yeah.
That's another hard-hitting, tough
Harley,
dude.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, it was a snake pit of tough guys.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah, and then... Yeah, Harley was, again, a great deal of work. We did the Slammy Awards, me and Harley.
I want to talk about that. Is that the big brawl backstage?
Yeah, backstage.
Tell me about, how was that pitched to you?
Yeah, they came in because I won two Slammys for like best vocals and best hit, you know, the ho. But anyway, so I go up to get the award. It's Bobby and the King, Harley, right? So as I get the award, boom, they push me off stage. Once they pushed me off stage, everything's a tape. They taped it all the day before, right? So we fought all through the building. We had a hell of a battle through the girls' dressing room, through the cafeteria. We went in the running room. There's like a donkey and chickens and all this stuff. We're battling away. Harley picks a chicken up by the head. Boom, boom, boom. Killed the chicken. Oh, my God. Thought we were going to have to shut production down. The chicken's dead. Oh, my God. Because we're having churches for lunch, but, I mean, that chicken almost shut down all the production, man.
Didn't you hit him with, like, a giant, like, salmon?
I had him with salmon by the tail. I was beating him with it.
Now, what does Harley Race think? One of the hard-hitting, old-school...
carry a gun all the time. Yeah.
Coming in there and pouring a punch bowl over your head.
Yeah. I tell you, though, that was the golden age of wrestling. Mm-hmm. I mean, the 40 years of wrestling, people say, hey, how about the WWF? Few folks still remember WCW, few Mid-South, very few WWE, because short-lived there, but that was, and I'm still making a career out of it.
Yeah, because like you said, that's one of the most endearing characters from that time frame. Cheers, brother. This might be the first time we ever shared a glass together. Was one of the most endearing characters. Like even when Beefcake got put in the Hall of Fame, I was like, he should be in there. Brutus the Barber, Beefcake. Everybody knows whether you had a good match, bad match. Everyone knows that gimmick. Everyone knows Hacksaw. Yeah. Everyone knows Hulk. Everyone knows Jake the Snake.
Of course, you didn't have 200 channels to choose from back then either.
Right? Yeah.
It was a game show, news, or wrestling.
Did you ever have to do any of those singing things at the Slammies when you guys have to get on the stage and sing?
Well, actually, I got a lot of folks been bringing my album here. It's Hacksaw Jim Duggan beats people up. Beats people up.
Get an album?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's on the album. My song's on the album, but they put my one song on a big,
on the, was it on the Pile Driver album?
No, it's on one of the other ones, but on Pile, that was the first, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, beats people up. You got that, brother?
Jack's got it.
Yeah.
What album was it from, Jack?
I think it might have just been called WWF the album.
Yeah, it's a WWF. I think it went gold, so I do a lot of these charity events. So, yeah, I got a gold album. What the hell?
What the hell? Shut up there. Because that's also, too, they're making dolls.
Yeah. They're action figures, buddy.
Oh, jeez. You just went Vince on me. You know, the best thing of all is that now, I don't know if you see Becky Lynch, she has two belts, two titles, and she calls herself Becky Two Belts. And Vince is now, after probably 20 years, has rescinded the rule that you can't call them belts. You have to call them titles or championship belts.
Right. Not even straps.
Hates belts and straps. But
But he also cleaned up the language. Remember back, you know, you shit can somebody out of the ring and all the terminology was F this, F that. And
well, he went through a phase. He was like, everybody swears too much in going over a match. And he wanted us all to stop swearing. And then about 2 weeks later, I go in there explaining the angle. They're going to fucking hit him over here. Shit can over there. You got to fuck him up there. And you got to
shit can somebody.
I thought we weren't allowed to swear anymore. It's all that stupid. How can we not?
You guys aren't.
Yeah, exactly. What about Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling? You were in that too, right? The cartoon?
No, I wasn't in the cartoon.
Oh, that must have been.
But I did Hogan and Friends. That was, we go as like me, Hobbs, Sags, Hogan, Coco. We do these Q&As. Who are you going to ask a question to?
Oh, this is a live show.
Yeah, live show. We traveled around the country doing it for a while. You know, poor Hogan's like, yak. And the guy's like, this is great, Hulkster.
I still get my payoff.
He's like, that's enough of that.
Hulk Hogan and Friends. Yeah. Oh, that's so great. That's so great.
Yeah, well, we enjoyed it. You know. I only did a couple of his shows, but, I know we could talk about that. I don't know if you saw that blockbuster movie we did.
Which one?
Pro wrestlers versus zombies.
I did not.
Kurt Angle, Matt Hardy, Piper, and myself, man, and a bunch of zombies attack a wrestling show.
Sounds like a classic.
Oh my God! It went right to DVD. Yeah. It was bad. But we filmed it in Parkersburg, West Virginia, so they saved a lot of money on makeup for the zombies. Yeah.
But I tell you what, I'm not going to say you plagiarized, but that sounds like a Piper joke to me.
Yeah, it was. All right, you got me.
You almost kind of literally. I'll tell you.
Because in the deal, not to give the story away,
spoiler alert,
the zombies get me, right? They turn me into a zombie. So we're doing the read through for the next day's shoot. Me, Piper, the director, is like, Piper finds Duggan a zombie. Piper kills Duggan, but feels bad about it. Because we did that Legends House, that reality show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there was eight of us. Howard Finkel, Gene Okerlund, Pat Patterson, Jimmy, Tony Hart. Atlas, me and Pipe, and Hillbilly.
Right.
And Piper was my roommate. Oh, my God.
So the concept of the show is all you guys kind of like old-timers, quote-unquote, living together.
Yeah.
Like what's it called? The MTV show, whatever.
Yeah. It was a beautiful mansion. God, it was
real world. Gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah, real world. Great. Out in Palm Springs. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I didn't really know Pipe the first couple of days. Was like, yeah, how you doing, brother? You know, we're eyeballing each other. But then we hit it off. Became best friends.
So you were never real good friends back in the day?
No, not really. We knew each other, but we never hung
Never really
together.
Come. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. But I always joke. I said, the best thing about Ruman was Piper is you can get away with anything. You blame it on Piper. You
know? He won't remember anyways.
No, he straightened up there at the end, God bless him. Yeah. Yeah, he really did. He was physically, he was broke up pretty good. Mm-hmm. He was one. But one night I went out and I threw all the pool furniture in the pool, just try to liven it up, be a big whodunit the next morning, right? So I waited the next morning. I went out and I walked in the kitchen. Pat and Gene are in there. Pat, it's hot. He goes, I just talked to Vince. Vince is going to pull the plug on the whole project. Somebody ruined all the pool furniture. And I'm like, well, Piper, he wasn't in his bed last night. Oh, that Piper. He comes in to have breakfast. They all jump on his head.
So how was that show?
That was fun. Yeah, it was fun. Me and Piper was like summer camp for us. Yeah, everybody else would go to bed. We'd be giggling. And, of course, we'd sneak out every once in a while to have a little puff, you know. And, you know, Vince, you knew where some of the cameras were.
Right.
But, you know, he has some hidden cameras. Oh, yeah. So it's got to be me and Piper sneaking around the back of the tennis courts. That's got to show up one day.
Batista and I had a cage match once. Long story short, he gigged. He wasn't supposed to. He got in big trouble. I got in big trouble because I was the general of the match. And Vince sat us down and then showed us the video of the match. Like when you see a UFO show and they show like the little round circle where the UFO is. He's showing the round circle where Batista's gigging. And he's showing these camera angles that I've never seen before. Like they're not hard camera. They're not. There's a camera where the Tron is when you come out on the stage up there somewhere. Because I asked him, I said, "Do you have secret cameras?" He goes, "Well, I'm not going to tell you that." Thing, there was a secret camera angle. So yeah, this camera's
there. One in the dressing room.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah. Well, you know, Vince, I tell you, he's one of the first guys to work. One of the last guys to leave there. Mm-hmm. Man, you got to respect him one way or the
work
other.
Work ethic
man.
All across the board.
Yeah. Really. I know. A while back, I did. I was there doing a rehearsal for something with a headset. And I said something and all of a sudden, no, Jim, that's not right. I'm like, well, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. What are you doing here? Right?
Yeah.
I have genuflected. I said, thank you.
I have a theory that he hangs out at every Madison Square Garden show in the rafters like the Phantom of the Opera. I think he's always there somewhere.
I would say the Hunchback, but you can't say that no more. Too soon.
Too soon? Yeah, too soon? Yeah. Hey, they gave $1 billion for the Notre Dame restore. So I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, that's
Yeah, exactly.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So what did you, when you're working in WCW, as we start to wind down here, obviously it's a different world now because, like you said, I know there's a lot of guys that work there. Just make your money, brother. Don't worry about it. Was it more disorganized or was it cool until a certain point, or did you really enjoy working there?
Yeah, I enjoy. Well, first, it was fun in the beginning, you know, and then towards the end, my opinion is they were trying to push me out of my contract, you know, and I had a nice little contract. They flew me up to the CNN Center and they're like, Duggan, we're going to make you the janitor of WCW. I'm like, well, great. You know, you got to wear a janitor suit. I'm like, well, that's what janitors do. What the hell? And when I came to do the vignette, I was supposed to clean Vince Russo's toilet with a toothbrush, you know. Mm. So when I got that poor Diet Coke in the toilet, right, instead of doing this, I'm like, oh, I'm cleaning the toilet. The gimmick got over a little bit. I found the TV title in the trash. You know?
Well, of course it's going to get over because you're doing it.
Yeah. Well, that's the deal. Embrace it. If you do something like that, embrace it. One Man Gang as Akeem, he embraced it. Terry Taylor as Red Rooster, he hated it. In the course, it
didn't work.
It didn't work.
We had a show in Winnipeg once, Raw, the last time Raw was there. And I showed up like, what am I going to do tonight? Challenge for the world title? Am I in the main event? And it's like, no, you're in a musical chairs contest. I'm like, what? Hey, you're doing musical chairs contest. It's my hometown.
Right. Yeah.
No, this is what you're going to do. And it's either you have two ways to go, get pissed off and sandbag it, or go, okay, this is going to be the best musical chairs segment ever. And it was great, but. Yeah. Your own ego gets in front of you and you forget it's a show, right?
Well, that's why you're more professional, because especially as you're younger, you're like, I ain't going to do that.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I know when I first started, like, well, I'm not going to beg. There's a bad guy. I'm not going to please. A few years in the business, don't hit me, please. Ask the people and then the kick.
A few years in the business, don't hit me with that giant salmon backstage at the Slammies. But that's how it is. Like you said, people forget sometimes that this is show business.
Yeah.
And if you and I get a part in a Steven Spielberg movie, mm-hmm. and here's the script, and Duggan begs off and Jericho plays musical chairs, you're going to do it.
But I'll tell you something, Chris. I doubt if you even remember this, buddy. I was at WCW, and I was doing, and they tried to use me up to build people. I was doing jobs for stuff, and they had us scheduled as a match. And you came down. You were supposed to come down in your street clothes and just go to the Duggan, you old timer. I'm not even going to wrestle you. It's not even worth it. Before the show, you came up to me and said, "Jim, I'm really not comfortable saying this stuff to you." Something I always remember. I thought that was a very class act. Mm. I appreciate it. And I was like, oh, please, Chris, you say something to me that elevates me, my brother.
But there's a way to say it, though. You know what I mean? Because they tried to get me to do that to Marty Jannetty one time, too. And it's like, I'm not comfortable saying this, A, because obviously I have respect for the business. But on the on-show segment of the show, it doesn't help me to say it. It doesn't help you to say it. So why say it? Nobody's getting over.
No.
Let's do it the other way around of like, hey, you're...
many guys would do that, bro?
Well,
There
was actually another time I remember, if you remember this one, in WWE, probably about 2009 or so. Because I remember you were wearing blue gym shorts to the ring for a while.
Right, yeah.
And they wanted us to have like a 30-second match and then go into something else. And I said, why even have the match? Let's just have a promo.
Right.
And I'll say something or whatever it was. And then there's no reason for us to have a 30-second match.
Right.
Uh-huh. And whether I win or lose, if you want us to have a match, let us have a match and we'll go beat the shit out of each other for 5 minutes or so and have some fun. You know what I mean? Like you have to stand up for what you're doing sometimes, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, when speaking of young guys doing it the right way, Edge, I was, when they brought me back to WWE, Lita was a hoe. That got my foot in the door. So they brought me in and they're like, they finally put me on TV with Edge. I think they were going to see how it went. And I'm thinking Edge, he's looking at me like an old timer. He's like, he's giving me his B game. No, he went out there, gave me his A game, made me look good, and actually got me a contract with the WWE.
That's right, because you got a latter year contract.
Yeah, that's something I'm most proud about, because the WWF was my heyday, but I also worked in WWE as a talent.
About 2010 or 12 or 9?
Yeah, something like that.
I remember that.
They teamed me up with Eugene for a while, and then Super Crazy. I was with Super Crazy a little bit. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Work with Umaga, another giant Duggan.
It's
your 2x4.
He was good, though, man.
Yeah. Well, he killed me, too. I mean, for a while, my wife would come out. I was getting ready to wrestle Yokozuna. She'd come out. She goes, Jim, don't do it. He'll kill you. Yokozuna killed me. I'm working with Goldberg. She does his deal on TV. Jim, don't do it. Goldberg will kill you. He killed me. I'm like, honey, don't come out anymore. Jesus. Every time you come out, I get crushed.
You're my bad luck charm.
You met Deborah.
So, like, once again, as we wind down, you still work now? You said you do some indies here and there.
Yeah, well, actually, I'm going to the ring tonight.
That's right.
So we have to man tag,
And here I am giving you brother cocktails.
Oh, geez, I didn't know.
Yeah. Edit that out.
So that's the deal. They're like, Hacksaw, he wants you to run down and jump in the ring. I'm like, you want me to do what? You guys got stairs, don't you?
But that's the thing I love is you're still involved. And we talked about this earlier, because you got over with a and a 2x4. That's all you have to do.
Still works to this day.
Right.
And it does. Yeah. I mean, And who would have ever thought it would work? You know, like I said, there's no set formula. We're in something like football. If you run a 4.5 40, bench press 500 pounds, have a, you know, a 30-inch vertical leap, you got a good chance of making it. No set formula. What would work for some guy in wrestling doesn't work for another guy. It just the luck of the draw. And that's why kids come up, they go, Hacksaw, I want to be a wrestler. You got any advice for me? I'm like, yeah, get golf clubs, kid. I said, that's where the money's at and a lot easier on the body.
Winnipeg is being such a huge wrestling town. I used to go hang out at the hotel. It was the Polo Park Inn.
Right.
I'm sure you remember.
Yeah.
And I would wait to meet the guys. And I was always super scared to talk to the big guys. So I talked to the little guys, talked to Coco, and I talked to Sean, and I talked to, you know, those guys. And one time I went to talk to the Bulldogs, and, or maybe I can't remember, it might have been Akeem, one of those two. And when I went to approach them, they looked at me like, don't even think about it. I'll kill you. And I walked away, and you were standing there. And I don't know why you did this. You don't, obviously don't remember this, nor should you. But I think you might have seen that this 15-year-old kid was just basically told, like, I'm going to kill you. And I was walking away, and you went, how are you doing, kid? And I said, good. He said, what's your name? I said, Chris. I said, nice to meet you, Chris. And he gave me like one of those overwhelming handshakes where you're going up and down, up and down, up and down. And then you said, have a good time. And I was like, thank you, Hacksaw Duggan.
Oh, cool.
And my friend was there. I said, did you get a picture? And he couldn't get the thing to work. But I'll never forget that it was those guys were like kind of mean, and you were, I think you saw it, or maybe you just were being nice, or maybe you were brother buzzed. I'm not sure, but you gave me, I remember that.
As you know, doing stuff like this, the fans are, you know, so great. I mean, to be remembered, it's humbling. You know, you're standing in line, you're signing autographs, you see this big, tough guy in line, and he's working his way through. You're like, where's security, you know? And he finally gets up to me, he like, grabs my hand, he gives me the grippers, he squeezes my hand, he goes, Hacksaw Duggan, me and my dad, we used to watch you together. It's humbling to have folks like that. A lady today came up with a picture of her mom. They used to watch the show and just hugged and cried. I mean, it's humbling to think you have that kind of effect on folks just from a TV show that long ago. That's why you try to interact with them. You know, have, you know, you see some guys just sign an autograph. Yeah. And they're like, come on, brother. Hey, how's your day? How's it going?
You know, I saw you today with the crowd in line going, hey, oh, come on over here, say hey, oh. You know, last question for you. From a wrestling standpoint, what's your favorite match that you ever had?
Well, the biggest feather in my cap, of course, is I won the first Royal Rumble. Everybody remembers that.
That's right. You won the first Royal Rumble.
Yeah, but then, but what I remember, though, you know, is being from a small little town in upstate New York. As a kid, my dad would bring me to New York City to Madison Square Garden to see the circus, you know. So as an adult, to drive up in front of Madison Square Garden and see Hacksaw Jim Duggan versus Andre the Giant. I mean, it was a double main event at the Garden and being there with Andre, and it was a thrill of a lifetime. And no matter what profession you're in, you sell out the Garden, you sell out the Garden. So it's, Andre sold out the Garden. I was there with him.
It always takes two, brother.
Oh, man. Yeah, man.
Hack, so thank you so much for doing this, man.
My pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having me on, man. Yeah, good to see you, my friend.
And I'm going to come see your comedy show in Winnipeg at Yuck Yucks.
No heckling.
No, I'm gonna, tell us about the Iron Sheik story if Deborah can't make it that day.